You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Alex Machuca from Lincrest Media. Welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, have I pronunciated your name correctly, Isms?
You did. And you know what's funny is, like, a lot of people get it wrong, but you got it right.
Well, I spent hours in front of the mirror going, Machuca.
Well, I appreciate that.
That's fine. It's all part of the service.
When I was growing up, I used to always dread the first day of school, because they would butcher my name. It'd embarrass me.
The funny thing is, because people, again, it's a funny thing about names, because people say, hi, you know, it's Matthew Sullivan. And they go, is it Matt or Matthew? I said, I just told you. You know, it's Matthew. I don't say that, obviously, because that would just be, rude.
Right.
But it's like, is it Matt or, it's, I don't mind. You know, it's like, you know, you're there. You got the first syllable.
Yeah.
Everyone over here is Matt. It's like, I christened thee Matthew Sullivan, henceforth known as Matt. Anyway, you're Alexander, presumably.
Oh, Alejandro, actually.
Alejandro.
Oh, Alejandro, fantastic. But I go by Alex. My parents, my whole life, they call me Alex, so I'm Alex.
But again, that has a great sort of warrior name. You know, I think, you know, Alexander the Great. We are digressing only because I want to savor the moment, because I want to dive in, because I want to talk about mortgage leads, which is the equivalent of harvesting hen's teeth carried by wizards on the third blue moon of the month.
That's pretty funny.
It's true, though.
Great analogy.
You can have that if you want.
Yeah, I think I might use it.
In exchange for unlimited mortgage leads, yes. Yeah. But lead generation. So I speak to a lot of people about lead generation and just, you know, marketing and, you know, just trying to create momentum. So what you've done is you've created a business that is very specifically focused on something that's actually very difficult to do and also very difficult to measure. Because you come up with a lead and you hand it over to someone who does a great interpretation of one of the Muppets,
yeah,
you know, who specializes in dropping the ball. So,
oh yeah, you're absolutely
I'm looking
right
for
that.
Signs on your forehead where you've been banging your head against the wall. In
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So, tell me how did you what made you get into what made you sort of create Lincrest, and what was the path traveled before then?
So I've always been very entrepreneurial. My father owned his own business. When I was 16, he lost his business. I went from living in like this great house to living in a family friend's basement. So, you know, being a spoiled kid, going from spoiled to nothing, I mean, it really messes with you. So, you know, got pretty depressed and I just decided, hey, I got to get my family back. It was a long journey. You know, I started this company after multiple failed companies. I started this company at the beginning of a pandemic. So
you like a challenge then.
Yeah. Well, you know, basically I got involved with this other company called West 54 Productions. And my job was to raise money for the company. I did a great job at that. I cold called Pepsi, got them to give us $250,000 in sponsorship money. Cold called Cholula, got them to do that. So all in all, I raised about $600,000. The company ended up failing because of the pandemic. And I was stuck with about $2,000 in my bank account. And I remember taking a liking to Facebook ads, because that's how we would sell tickets.
Yes.
But my partners at the time were like, you don't know shit about Facebook ads. Yeah. Keep your nose out of our business. Your job is to raise money and sit there and you know, look pretty.
Is a red rag to a bull when it comes to, you know, for someone who's got their entrepreneurial blood.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I didn't listen to that. I was like, well, I guess I need to learn more about Facebook ads so I have more credibility. And they kept pushing me out of it. The company failed. Then I had, I think, $2,000 left in my bank account. I bought a course called The Digital Marketing Manuscript by Jeremy Haynes. And I also like to sports gamble a little bit. So I got some more money after that. And I bought another course called Nurture and Close by Rob Bailey. And that course completely changed my life. Within 3 months, my company was doing 50K per month in monthly recurring revenue. Wow. Within eight, we got to 100K a month. And then in about a little under 11 months, we scaled to about 500,000 a month.
This was a company that you started from scratch. So you go and
you think
of the name and think of what we're going to do. And, you know, how do we, what's the message and the website? And looking at all of the materials that you have, I mean, it's engaging, it's to the point, it's, you know, delivers a message we can deliver. Here are examples of people that have used us. Here are the testimonials. So all of that, A, in a pandemic, B, you know, in a very competitive marketplace.
Yeah.
But there seemed to be a bit of a gap. So you had all of these failures, which are actually not failures. They're all training companies, basically.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
No such thing as failure.
You know, I think what I have, and I think what a lot of other entrepreneurs have, is shiny object syndrome.
Yes.
They don't stick with one thing. So for me, you know, when my first company I ever started was an IT recruiting company. And we did okay. I think we did like 100,000 the first year. But it was very feast or famine. You know, what I realized very quickly is you get one deal, then you have to worry about where your next deal is coming from, right? So I knew that my next business that I wanted to do was going to be a subscription-based model where I could make money while I sleep.
Hey, you mean regular income?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, having that monthly recurring revenue that compounds over time, it's extremely lucrative. You know, I was able to take my family, my entire family to Tulum for their all expenses paid trip. I got engaged on a yacht back in February with my whole family. So it's been very fruitful, very rewarding. And the cool part is that a lot of the gurus that I learned from, I've surpassed them in revenue within 11 months of
but these courses, so you buy a course, which is great because you're committed. So that means you're motivated to actually. But do you find that a lot of the courses that you've, you say that one of the courses was quite impactful. How much do you actually take? Do you find like you take a ton of stuff out of there, or is it just one or two nuggets that is enough?
Right. So it really depends. You can go back, like the Digital Marketing Manuscript by Jeremy Haynes, I'll go back and refer to it sometimes. I think it's more high level. There's two types of courses. There's the ones that just give you information and they're just like, use it how you want. And then there's the other courses that literally walk you through and hold your hand, everything that you need to do to get started. And that's what Nurture and Close did. Nurture and Close gave me a way to get clients and get testimonials and then leverage those testimonials to get more business. And it walked me through the entire thing. So, you know, I think what happens is a lot of people will take a course and it'll have the right information, but it doesn't push them to take action, right? These are the actionable steps that you need to take. Some of them do, some of them don't. But, you know, I think the difference is, you know, some people actually go for it and others don't. You know, like going for the sales and stuff like that.
Key point, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't
make him drink it, right?
And I think that's a lot, you know, just buying a course doesn't give you a free ticket to.
Exactly. And that's what these people think. They think it's a done for you. Like, it's not. You still have to do the work.
Yeah.
It's just like we were talking about with our mortgage leads, right? We give them the leads. These are not done for you loans. You still need to do the work.
Can't you just send me the commission and cut out all the processes in the middle? You
know? Right. That's what they want.
But what made you say there's a gap though? In other words, there's the bit where you were working with the other guys and their business failed. You were very successful. You were raising capital from big brand names, which are, you know, really difficult to break into. Pandemic comes along and then a couple of $1,000. It depends on how big that win was on sports betting. You know, so the yacht that you got engaged on, is that the yacht that you got from your sports betting winnings? Or
no, but I parlayed the sports betting winnings into a yacht for sure because I bought the course. I love sports. I love football. Like, for example, I own a suite at Sun Devil Stadium. I graduated from Arizona State University. I'm a diehard football fan. I have a game tonight. It's the first game of the season. I just bought the suite. So it's awesome. They let me design it. So I put in new carpets. I designed the wall. It's freaking awesome.
It's funny.
But yeah,
it's funny the motivation you get when something is under your skin like that.
Right.
But then, moving this across to, so deciding to move into mortgage leads or lead generation, I can see that there's a natural pathway. But but in a lot of cases, people that I speak to, they say the reason I'm into this business was because I actually had a real problem with that. And right. then I realized, hang on, you know, because that was a problem that I had. If I could solve that problem for other people, then there's a business. Right. But,
you know. Mine is a little bit different. So, you know, when you're in these marketing courses, you know, if you can't start your own business, what they tell you is go work for somebody who does. Go work for somebody else who owns a marketing company.
That's pretty smart, yeah.
In the Facebook group, there's this guy named Zach Barada. God bless him. Amazing guy. He was looking for sales guys. And I was like, I'm an incredible sales guy. I just cold called Pepsi and got them to give me $250,000 in 3 phone calls and then did it again with Cholula. You're not going to be able to find a better sales guy than me. I'll work for you, but I want to learn the ins and outs of the business. And he was like, all right. So within a month, I learned the ins and outs on the business. And I was like, hey, bud, I think I can do something.
I didn't tell you how long I'd be working with you.
Yes. And I you know what? As gracious as Zach is, Zach was like, you know what, brother? There's enough business in here for both of us.
And what business was he in? It was he in?
Mortgage okay. lead generation, right. So I looked at what he was doing and I said, you know, I think I could do that. Probably might be able to do that a little bit better. You know, he really inspired me because I saw how much money he was making. He was making like 40K a month or something like that at the time, or like 45K. And I was like, that is a lot of money to me. And, you know, now, you know, we've far surpassed, you know, anything that the average agency owner does in monthly recurring revenue.
And sorry, my Zoom has just decided to become incredibly random. So we'll just have to run with it. But it's I'm going to press some buttons here. So for those of you watching on video, I've absolutely no idea what's gone wrong. It's just entirely random. But we'll chop it. Hey, no, it's fine. It's just, you know, we're back now, ladies and gentlemen, both of you. But how do you start when you get into sort of the mortgage space? It's a big task because it's incredibly competitive. Everyone is promising the same thing. You know, everyone is promising, you know, leads, they're promising conversion rates and all this sort of stuff. And how do you differentiate yourself? How do you get those initial leads under your belt so that you can prove that you've got, you know, that track record?
So we're very unique in our offer. A lot of lead generation companies in the mortgage industry, they're still very primitive. They're like living in the medieval times. But I think I think differently than most entrepreneurs, okay?
Yeah.
Most entrepreneurs, when they look at problem solving, they look at the logical solutions, right? What is the logical solution to solving this problem, right? So, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard about this, but there's a train in London, and you know, that train goes, you know, it basically had really bad rider reviews, right? Really bad ride share reviews. People, it's boring. We're waiting for the train. It's taking forever. So the logical solution to that would be, all right, let's fix the engine and make the train go faster, right?
Yes.
Right. But the psychological solution to that would be putting a dotted map on the train, showing people where the stops are and how much longer they have to go.
Yes. Right.
So when recognizing that, and that one's a much cheaper option, right? And once they made that change, the rider share reviews went up tenfold. So, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs are thinking about logical solutions, but what they're not thinking about is the psychological solutions, because it's not so much tied as to the result of the deliverables, but it's how the result of the deliverables make them feel that get them to stay. So go ahead.
And so where did you learn? So that's, again, so these are all interesting things, because there's a lot of truth in that. So if you tell people what's going on, then they'll wait, they'll hang around. It's where there's lack of knowledge, exactly.
Right. People don't like to be left in the dark.
But where did you learn that from? How did you know that is truth? And how do you apply that in creating a scalable business that allows you to deliver consistent leads? Because the biggest issue that we have with lead generation generally is that if people try and build a business based on leads they're getting from you, and then those leads begin to taper off, then, you know, you lose that customer. So how do you create consistency?
So I learned that from Alex Hormozi. I know it's right because he's doing about $85 million a year. To answer your questions in order.
Yes.
There's going to be an abundance of problems. No lead generation service is perfect, right? So really a lot of it is learning as you go. But I think thinking outside of the box as opposed to, because the problem with logical solutions is if it's a logical solution, that means that most likely other entrepreneurs have tried it, right?
Yes.
If it worked, then it would never be a problem because you probably know about it beforehand. The logical solution to that problem, you would have been proactive about solving that problem. But when you're looking about when you're thinking about psychological solutions, you're thinking outside the box. So for example, you know, one of the most important things is to get people early wins. You want to get them early wins. In the mortgage industry, it's tough to get people early wins because closing a home takes 45 days.
Yes.
Right? So how the heck are we going to get them early wins? Front load the ad spend and get them more appointments? Well, that would be the logical solution. The psychological solution would be, hey, you know what? When I speak to a lot of these mortgage brokers, they all tell me they're the number one mortgage broker in the country, right? They're all, they have big egos. You have to know the candidate profile of the client profile. So these guys, they all have big egos. They're all competitive. And no matter how many times somebody told me they're the best mortgage broker in the country, I was never able to corroborate that story, right? So by getting them an early win, I can't get them a closed loan because it takes 45 days. But what I can do is make their delusional reality that they're the number one mortgage broker in the country.
Yes.
Possible by putting them in a press article every month.
Yeah.
Right. And that's an early win, right? I call them on day 10. Hey, just got you in New York Weekly.
Yes.
And we're going to leverage this press, send it out to all your leads so that they see this article before they speak to you, thus getting you more credibility. That's an early win, barely cost us any money. And it's a psychological win. It doesn't impact their ROI directly. It doesn't generate them, you know, money.
Yes.
You know, and that's also a common misconception with press.
It does, though. I think it does have an impact because over time, what it does is it builds trust because.
Right. Listen, it'll help you close. It's not going to bring in new customers, but it'll help you close new customers.
But I just don't want you to be too hard on yourself there because I think that is getting that kind of PR as opposed to paid PR. And, you know, press articles is like a combination of the two, really. You know, I mean, obviously you're buying the press release, but if you're getting PR or you're getting an article or some sort of coverage in any type of journal, then that's a very positive thing. So that's
right.
You know, and that is a great way of building the credibility of that particular broker and giving them something.
It's more so about the credibility than it is the exposure.
But right. One thing leads to another. So, and again, that's, you know, credibility and trust is the building block of being able to get people over the line. So what is, so that's one thing. So you're building credibility for the broker on this side so that when that broker has a conversation with someone,
right,
that someone may feel a little bit more confident because this guy has appeared in this magazine or this newspaper.
Right. And the logical solution, right, would be how do we get him something that gets us a key performance indicator, right? A KPI,
yeah,
right? Something that's measurable where we can measure the ROI. That's where everybody goes to. They're like, this is a logical solution. This is a money, you know, numbers. This is a logical solution. When in reality, the psychological solution helped us retain that customer way more than any logical solution, like getting them more appointments or getting them more leads would.
Which you need, because you need time to be able to build a rapport and to be able to get pipeline in for these customers because you know, in my experience, if you've got a list of people that you're speaking to, a percentage of those will close very quickly because they have that immediate need, but if you know, the vast percentage of people will do nothing because people naturally are inclined not to do things as opposed to do things. So, and what you've got to do, I guess, is keep them there long enough so that the people that you've put in the pipeline begin to sort of move through the pipeline and go from suspects to prospects to customers.
Right.
But the main question though, really, and thank you for bearing with me as I spouted that sort of, you know, 30 seconds of distilled BS. The biggest challenge though is in a very competitive world where mortgages are all about interest rates and fractions of interest rates, how do you get numbers of people to go into the top of the funnel at a cost-effective rate?
Well, you know, it actually is more expensive for us to get them at the top of the funnel than any other company. And that's because we eliminate every single lead that has a bad credit score. So it gets rid of like 50% of our leads. So that means that in order to get 100 valid leads, I have to generate 200 leads, right?
Yeah.
At Facebook, they don't care. They're going to charge me the same for the good credit as they do as for the bad credit. So we're actually much more expensive at the top of the funnel, but we sacrifice that to get higher quality leads for our clients. You know, most companies, because they're so small, they're worried about their profit margins and their cost per lead. We're worried about delivering a high quality service to get the retention that we feel we deserve.
And do you have issues with Facebook? Because Facebook's...
So many issues. The iOS 14 update increased our cost per lead by 25%. Facebook has shut down our ad accounts for months before, which completely hinders our business, lost us hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's just a ton of different things that, and they don't care. Facebook doesn't care because they don't have any other competition out there. So it doesn't really matter. Their support sucks. They outsourced it all to a different country. They don't care.
But what is, but again, there is a, you know, there's a lot of people that look at Facebook. So if you were to talk about your primary source of leads, again, looking at your, some of the history that I read, is it Facebook? Is it Google Ads? Is it
Facebook?
So despite that, despite the regulations, because you have to be very careful what you say. You cannot say, for example, as far as I understand, are you in debt? Are you suffering from poor credit? Because you're sort of trying to target a community that's...
Right. Yeah, you can't target people based on their income, especially in real estate. You can't target because of the Fair Housing Act, right? We can't target them on their income or their age or their gender, anything like that.
But how do you find it's the content that gets the results?
Right. What is Facebook tells you.
Targeting right. or?
No, your targeting is locked. It's very limited. So when you're advertising on Facebook, you have to click special ad category if you're advertising in real estate. So you can't target. It locks all your targeting because of the Fair Housing Act. Now, what Facebook tells you is that you can't target. What they don't tell you is that their algorithm can. So if you know how to write copy correctly, you can actually kind of manipulate the algorithm into targeting the people that you want, because the way the algorithm learns is, okay, this person clicked on the ad. Let me go find somebody exactly like this to click on it, put it in front of them so they click on it. So if I'm targeting teachers and I call them out in the ad, well, then teachers are going to click on it, which means the algorithm is going to learn that this is the right type of candidate that we need, and it's going to target more teachers.
And again, this is stuff that you cannot learn from third parties. This is stuff that you have to do yourself.
Right.
You have to fine tune. You have to see the results.
Or they can learn it on the Startups podcast.
Yeah, well, there you are. Yes, and for those of you listening, this is these golden nuggets of information here. But that's absolutely right. Again, because it's a long running discussion that we have. Some people say that, you know, audience selection is critical. Most people, and the people that I believe are absolutely correct, talk about copy. In other words, what you say, how you say it. It's great to hear that you're seeing those results from Facebook. But the next stage is, how do you capture those people? And again, without giving away any sort of, you know, secret sauce, as it were, but to get people over the line from clicking on an ad, what's the trade? What do you trade with them so that they give you their information so that you can continue?
Well, in our case, right, if these people click on an ad, they want to know what their rates are, right? So their reward is knowing what they qualify for. But you always want to have a call to action, right? Learn more, you know, click below to see if you qualify, right? Something like that, in order to get them to actually click on the link and engage.
But I see in your website as well that you take people to another stage where, or these leads where you pre-qualify, because I could click on a lead. And again, in most cases, those people are not terribly interested in doing something, in speaking to someone. So how do you, and I think you say you contact people, is it 90 times a day or something like that?
No, 20 times over the course of 90 days. So as soon as
I knew it was something like that. I thought 90 times a day is actually quite good. People are bound to either call the police
and then we got sued for harassment.
Yeah, that's fine. You know.
Yeah, yeah. 20 times over the course of 90 days. And the way I tell people to quantify this is, you know, our agreements are 90-day terms. So 20 times over the course of 90 days, if I give you 100 leads per month, which is exactly what we give you, you'd have to make about 6,000 phone calls to match that type of production. No MLO is going to make 6,000 phone calls. You know, when I ask a mortgage broker how good they are or how often they follow up on a lead before they give up on it, the good ones say 3 to 5 times. But statistics show us that the sale is in between the 7th and the 12th follow-up. So they're leaving a lot of money on the table, which is kind of like our value proposition. You know, not only are we going to generate the leads, but we're going to pursue those leads for you. and set up conversations for you to close. So all you have to worry about is closing.
And again, as a, you know, someone who's in this sort of service industry will appreciate that follow-up is critical, and that's what takes the most time. So how do you do that? Do you have a team of people in?
Yeah, we have about 35 plus employees.
And that's all staff that you've built over the last 18 months or so. And are they locally, or are they sort of?
Everybody's local. Unlike other companies, most people have appointment centers in India or the Philippines. Ours are in-house college grads from.
Because what I was going to say, do you think, even though your previous business suffered from COVID, do you think that COVID has allowed you to solve a real problem by?
Maybe. I think that, it's funny because when I was starting this business, a common objection that I would get, and not even from like clients, but like from my friends, they'd be like, how the heck are you going to start the business in the middle of this pandemic? Yeah. That's why when people are like, what are you going to do when the housing market shifts? I'm like, I don't care.
But no one knew.
This company when there was the most uncertainty in the last 100 years. So yes. I don't let outside variables even seep into my mindset. Like, I'm just like, well, that's great.
Was it Warren Buffett that said, when everyone's selling, that's when you should be buying? I think so. That's the approach. And that's the true entrepreneurial approach, which is, okay, I don't care about the rest because I know that this will work. So for mortgage leads, again, scalability, you must be hugely in demand because prices of housing, or the price of housing generally across the US, has grown significantly, far faster than anyone's expectations.
Oh yeah, I just bought a house in November. It was about a little over $500,000, and it's now at a value of like 700 something.
Just think, but again, are you seeing from a general economic perspective that the people that you speak to are suffering from harder financial pressure or greater financial pressure, even though their assets are significantly higher in terms of the value of their home? The people, the clients, the potential leads that you speak to, are you seeing a pattern emerging where people are finding it harder than ever to find cash? So you've got this sort of separation that they're house rich but cash poor. Is that a pattern that you're seeing?
I wish I could know, but the problem is that I have nothing else to compare it to, right?
Yes.
I've just been dealing with the same people for the past 18 months. So, I don't really know. And I'm not doing the sales anymore either. I haven't done sales since February.
But that's, but the feedback that you get from your clients though, the general sort of, view, is it that they're saying that this is a very busy time? I mean, I'm thinking about,
yeah, it varies per state. It varies, right? Like, California is completely different than a place like New Jersey, right? Or New York. In New York we hear, it's really hard to find somebody to purchase a home, blah 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 blah. In California you would think it's the same. It's actually different. People are generating a lot of business in California.
So you're not doing sales anymore. So as the French say, le patron mange ici, for the restaurant owners, presumably you sort of pop your head around the door every now and then just to make sure that they're saying the right things.
Yeah. Well, so I think what helped me scale to where I am is I used to do everything myself, including the appointment setting.
Yes.
Which is like a minimum wage job.
Yes.
Everything on my own. And I had a call with this woman named Victoria Kennedy, very successful. She owns a press, a PR company. And she said, Alex, you have to let go.
Yes.
She's like, you have to let go of the reins and trust other people to do it. And the thing is, if you can find somebody that can do something 70% as good as you, that's a win. They can learn the other 30%,
absolutely,
right? So once I started to learn to let go of things and delegate, we just started exploding, right? And now what I'm doing is I'm trying to get my management to delegate because they don't want to let go of things. Hey, teach this person this. It's like, well, it's easier if I just do it for him. It's like, no, it's not. Yes. You're going to have to do it for him every time. So over the course of a long period of time, it's going to waste a lot of your time, right? For me, the most important thing for an entrepreneur is they have to understand it's not about working in the business. It's about working on the business. If you are working in the business, meaning you're doing sales, you're doing the delivery, that means you're working in the business. You can't scale like that. You need to work on the business in order to scale. So yes, that's been a main kind of main philosophy or focal point that's helped me, you know, scale to, you know, extraordinary numbers in such a short period of time.
And that is very sage advice. Many people, particularly small business owners, find themselves caught up in this never-ending cycle of effectively being probably a poorly paid employee,
right,
but with more responsibility because they try and do everything. So in terms of mentors, you mentioned that advice was from a friend or a colleague, but do you find yourself now looking for people to guide you when you're at this point of expansion?
Yes, I'm a big proponent of paying for knowledge. I'll pay to sit in a room with anybody. Alex Hormozi, you know, it's actually funny. So he's doing like 85 million a year. He's like one of the, in my ecosystem, he's like the number one guy. And last month he put up a post on Instagram. He's like, hey, I'm going to dinner with my wife, who also is a co-CEO of his company. She's a badass. And he's like, I am going to be going to dinner with my wife in Denver. We will be taking three people to dinner. You need to be making at least $1 million a year and you need to live in Denver. So I actually DM'd him and I said, hey, I don't live in Denver, but I am making over $1 million a year. But me not living in Denver is exactly why you should pick me, because I'm willing to get on a plane,
yes,
for that dinner. And within an hour, I was on my way to the airport. I flew into Denver and we had dinner that night. And I got to ask him every single question under the sun about my business.
Yes. And that's super, because many people do tend to feel that I don't want to talk to someone about this. They won't understand my business. And do you feel that there are moments where you were truly surprised about the level of knowledge that an outside view can bring?
Yes. I think there's a lot of advice that I receive, but I selectively execute, right? I don't, like, for example, if Alex, you know, he's doing 85 million a year, you would think everything that he tells me is like, that's what you need to do. It's, yes, in stone. That's not the case. I listen and I say, this applies to me. This might not apply to me. This applies to me. I don't feel like doing this one yet for whatever reasons that I didn't talk to Alex about, but I am going to execute this one. So, you know, I think the knowledge of your own business trumps anything else, regardless of how rich or how experienced that person is. However, it's important that you take outside perspective of somebody who's already been there to get those solutions and learn from his mistakes rather than learn from your own and postpone any growth that you could potentially have.
And in terms of growth, what do you have lined up for Linkrest Media? So
I think
more of the same or just...
I think we'll be doing $1 million a month by December, at February at the latest.
And that's in terms of
gross
fee income, effectively.
Gross revenue.
And then is this business scalable enough to meet your expectations, or do you see this leading to something else?
So I built this business with a plan to exit. If you have a company and you don't have an exit plan, all you've done is built a job for yourself. Right? That's all you've done.
Yes. I see. But again, exits are always very difficult to plan because, you know, what do they say? There's many a slip between cup and lip. So if you try and plan an exit to a particular destination, what tends to happen is that the tail begins to wag the dog.
You're right. And that's exactly what Alex said. Alex said, stop thinking about your exit because your exit is dictating your plans. You need to focus on the right now. Right. You need to focus on what's happening in your business right now. And then when you get to that point, whatever that number is, then you could look at selling. But don't let your plan to exit affect the way that you're running your company.
It's a bit like if you're a public company and you run the business just to keep the shareholders happy. What happens is,
right,
you know,
right,
ultimately, you know, it doesn't go according to plan. So the size or the growth, I can't see you selling this business. I mean, I can see you getting a bid and then going, yeah, that's all I really wanted.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because people ask me what my number is. And I said, you know what? I think my number is 50 million. And then it became 100 million. And I think it's just going to depend. When we get to $1 million a month, I'm going to look back and say, that was easy. Or I'm going to say, I don't want to go through that again to get to 2 million a month. It's going to be one or the other.
Well, the hardest is 0 to 1, isn't it?
The hardest is 0 to 10.
And then after that, it's the growth. And then
after that, it's easy. Once you hit 100, it's easy to hit 200. But once you get around the 400,000 a month mark, things start to break, which is kind of where we were at. I realized I'm overpaying a lot of staff. Just the other day, I cut about 50,000 in monthly recurring expenses for our business. So that just goes to show you that I'm a little bit, like I said, I like to gamble, right? I am borderline reckless when it comes to scaling. I just am very aggressive. But now I've learned from that. And now I am being much more conservative at this point. When I realized I could just cut 50,000 in monthly recurring revenue for my business like that, I was like, well, obviously I didn't need that if I could cut that much money out. So,
well, again, I mean, it may seem, I think reckless is a word, obviously, that you wouldn't use aggressive, or I think, in other words, where you're willing to take the risk. And I think you can be too hard on yourself, but you know, if you're willing to look at these things and not be afraid of what's going to happen. So in other words, not be afraid of people's reactions, or not being afraid of something happening that you can't predict. I think that's the important strength, isn't it, of being able to take those calculated risks, knowing in the back of your mind that actually I'm not doing this just for the hell of it. I'm doing this because it feels like we're spending too much. I can't put my finger on it, but that's hugely exciting. So, you know, and would you say your plan is 12 months or 24 months? But, you know, before, you know, are you now beginning to be able to plan stuff? Whereas before, you know, potentially you'd work on a shorter time frame.
It depends. So right now, you know, we dropped a little bit in MRR. So we were doing $500,000 a month, and we dropped because our Facebook ad account got shut down. So we're playing catch up. So I want to get right back to where we were. We're much more lean, meaning, you know, we have much less expenses this time around. So I think we're just going to shoot right past $500,000 a month. I think we'll probably have our next hurdle at about $1 million a month.
How do you deal with those types of third party exposure where you've got risk associated with someone doing something that you're not in control of?
So now what we're doing is we're not just relying on one omnichannel, we're relying on multiple omnichannels. We have multiple Facebook ad accounts. So if one gets shut down, we just simply use the other one. And then from a client acquisition standpoint, we're using YouTube, Google PPC, Facebook. So we're not putting all of
our multiple routes to market. And again, that normally comes out of something like that happening where you need
the capital to be able to spread out to those omni channels.
Well, that's fantastic. So, you know, it's just, you know, absolutely fantastic listening to the huge success that you're having. But we're going to switch gears now. We are moving on to the Hooked on Startups quick fire questionnaire. Fasten your Fasten your safety belt, scream if you want to go faster. Okay. Question number one. What is your favorite word?
That's a good question. Vacation.
Yeah. Question number two. What is your least favorite word?
Can't.
A common word, funnily enough. Question number three. What are you most excited about right now?
My business.
Fantastic. Number four. What turns you off right now?
I would say just negative attitudes in the office turn me off. Yes. You know, complainers. That stuff just, ugh.
I know what you mean. Number five. What sound or noise do you love?
Cha-ching.
Question six. What sound or noise do you hate?
I don't know. Maybe fart sounds.
Well, when you have those special vinyl chairs, you know.
Yeah, they make plenty.
Question number seven. What is your favorite curse word?
Definitely.
Brilliant. You know, it's the club. It's just
just in my vocabulary.
It is the best adjective, verb, and noun known to man, I think.
It is.
Question eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would love, and I can't because I'm 5'11", 180 pounds, but I would love to be a quarterback in the NFL.
Okay, so for all of you listening who have the power, you know, to make Alex's dream come true, send us a postcard. Question nine, what profession would you not like to attempt?
There are so many shitty professions.
Said like a true entrepreneur.
Anything with manual labor.
My final question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I've been waiting for you for a long time. Let's party.
Okay. Yeah, the last but less party, yes. I would imagine now, if you're God, you could probably throw quite a party, you know.
Yeah, probably.
Well,
you have Tupac there, Biggie there, you know.
Yes, yes. All your mates. Well, it's been such a pleasure having you on. Final question. How do people get hold of you? How do they learn more about how to engage you and work with you?
Well, I drop a lot of gems on my Twitter account, which is Scaling Fast. It's more of my business oriented account. I talk about, I keep people in the loop about my journey. I put my numbers in there. So like you can see what our company's doing in MRR. You know, I try and answer any questions that people have. So the Twitter handle is Scaling Fast, or you can follow me on Instagram. My account is AlChapo1.
Al Chapo one.
Not El Chapo, but Al Chapo.
Fantastic. Great. That's great. Thank you once again. I'll put all of those links in the show notes. And Alex, it's a pleasure meeting you. Fantastic. Look forward to staying in touch.
It sounds good.